There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
British cooking shows are more kind.
Oh my god. A new show There's called, no like, conclusion to them.
It is.
There's no competition.
It's nicer.
Yeah, but it's
focus
worthless.
On the cooking.
No, I know.
No.
This
has more competition.
You're talking about the British Bake Off? Great British Bake Off?
I like that one.
The one
like
episode, well, I saw many episodes, but one episode, they just let everyone stay. They said, oh, everyone did so good, you all get to stay. It's not a competition
sometimes.
Then.
They do that sometimes.
It was insane.
You're just trying, it's just a reaction. It's a reaction to American cooking shows.
I guess so.
American cooking shows is fucking Gordon Ramsay screaming at, have you ever watched Master Chef?
Yeah, of course.
He is making these people do impossible things and then being like, your technique is wrong! Everything! Your timing is wrong! And it's just like a woman just who was a minute ago was in her home.
I know it's hard. All right, this is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks.
Hi, Ben.
How you doing, Marcus?
I'm doing good, Ben. How about you?
Good, good. You look great.
Thank you.
We got Hong Kong over there in LA.
Yeah, and I got special edition today. No pants.
No pants.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
No pants, no shirt.
Oh, yeah. My goodness gracious.
And that's what's going to happen to all of us if we end net neutrality.
Wow, powerful
See?
Point.
No pants, wow. no powerful shirt. Statement. Every podcaster you know and love.
All I'm saying is this is the new Henry Zebrowski. I am bare minimum. Henry Zebrowski.
They're like Moby.
Rolling into the studio, yeah.
Moby Henry Zebrowski. All right, we're on to Black Widows Part 2, and the stories just get better from here.
So as far as pure stats go, the female serial killer, specifically the Black Widow, is by far better at serial killing than their male equivalent.
Good job. You get the award.
It's
you
so
get
brave.
The award.
They have higher body counts and on average kill for twice as long as males. Put into sports terms, Black Widows are like the San Antonio Spurs of serial killing. Not too flashy, but strong on fundamentals.
Oh, I see. You're also saying they all look like Tim Duncan, which is not yes. very kind.
But you've brought up the Spurs before.
Yes.
It seems to be the one team you truly understand, which I don't really understand why you know so much about the Spurs.
Marcus brings up the Spurs, you bring up Bobby Bonilla, and then that's the end of the conversation. That's the greatest sports conversation ever with Henry Zebrowski versus Marcus Parks. Bobby Bonilla, San Antonio Spurs, point counterpoint, show is done.
That's it. We're the new Barstool Sports. But the... Well, I would actually put them closer to the Southside Johnny of serial killers.
Southside Johnny?
Who is that?
Southside Johnny is the guy that inspired Bruce Springsteen. He was the guy on the beach, on the boardwalk, that was singing songs with the guitar, and Bruce Springsteen was like, man, that seems like a Randy life. And then he went and he took that life from him. But he brings Southside Johnny on tour a lot, and Southside Johnny is arguably one of the hardest working New Jersey guitarsmen it's ever been.
Wow, look at that. Maybe slowly poisoning the boss as well.
Now, for an example of a Black Widow with a 30-year career, let's look at Marie Besnard, a.k.a. the quote-unquote killer known officially as Reine des Empoisonneurs.
Oh, my goodness.
Which means the Queen of Poisoners.
Ooh.
Thank
I
you,
like
Henry.
That.
Did you go to Google Translate for that?
Yes.
Very good.
Marie Besnard was born Marie Deveol in Loudun, France. In
oh, my God.
This is going to be good.
In 1886 into a strict religious background, but when she got to her teen years, Marie was said to have blossomed into a quote-unquote vicious and immoral woman.
Ooh, maybe someone that would like to purchase our new Represent shirt that say Hail Satan. Last podcast on the
very
left for
good
Christmas.
Plug.
Thank you.
Very, very good plug.
Integrated marketing.
So 1920, at the age of 23, Marie married a cousin of the kissin' variety, August Antigny.
Wait, hold on. A cousin of the kissin' variety?
Kissin' cousins. You know what kissin' cousins are.
I know.
This is the thing. Question. Kissing cousins are just normally very close cousins.
They're
right? Is that the idea that they're so close they're fucking?
No.
Or is it just friends?
Well, what's the difference?
No, kissing
cousins. Kissing cousins aren't fucking cousins?
No, kissing cousins. Well, actually, a kissing cousin is a cousin that you can kiss and fuck without the risk of genetic abnormalities.
But legally, it's still not right.
Like, for example, Hold McNeely's grandparents were first cousins, right?
I have no idea what happened.
Yes, they were first cousins. But if you're, second and... further, like second, third, fourth, and fifth, those are kissing cousins, meaning you can marry. And it's not that socially acceptable, but, you know, you can kind of sweep it under the rug a little bit. And so the kids aren't going to be all, you know, wacky.
I see.
So that's street legal incest.
Yeah, I guess so. They really thought about this.
So 7 years after marrying Marie, August Antigone suddenly died from, quote-unquote, fluid in the lungs, giving Marie a small inheritance and a lifelong lust for murder and money.
Ooh. Awesome.
2 years later, she married a rope shop owner named Leon Besnard.
Man, back in the day, people talk about niche content now.
Uh-huh.
People say that there's niche markets. But just having a shop that's all ropes.
Just ropes. Then you got to go to the pulley place next. I mean, what a nightmare that is.
You know, before Walmart, that's how the world was.
Multiple stops?
I got to put on 5 layers of underwear.
Right.
I got to zip up my 3 coats.
Right.
I've got to hitch up a buggy, which involves a horse that doesn't want to be involved.
The horse hates
you. Hitch up to a thing. It's on a cobblestone street. Just boop, 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 boop. I got to go to the bean store.
Yeah.
I got to go to the carrot store. I got to go to the rope store.
And the thing is,
I got to go to the stool
store. They sell one bean at the bean store. One carrot at the carrot store. If it's sold out, come back in a week.
This is why I like Amazon. And we're going to another embedded ad here, www.amazon.com. If you've ever checked, if you got to check it out, they got so much stuff in there. You can buy a shotgun. You can buy a balaclava. You can buy a trampoline.
You can buy everything a depressed father needs for Christmas. A shotgun and whiskey. And a couch, most likely.
No, we don't know if Marie actually let Leon in on her previous experience as a poisoner, but after 10 years of marriage, one of Leon's aunts died from a quote-unquote lung ailment in 1938.
But how old were these people? It seems, you know, maybe they were in their 40s or 50s. Lung ailment might take you.
It might take you. I mean, all of these were plausible deaths.
Okay.
And 2 years after that lung ailment took down one of Leon's aunts, another aunt went down for the same thing after drinking a bottle of gift wine from Marie and Leon.
Ooh.
And thus the pattern was established, making Marie the rarest of serial killers, a black widow with a partner, specifically a male partner. See, male-female serial killer teams, partners, are a class all of their own, and we'll get a full episode. But this one was different. From what I can tell, the killing relationship between Marie and Leon was no more than that of a spider to its web.
Who's the web?
Leon.
Oh, so Leon's making...
Oh, Leon's
that's actually
web.
That's a very traditional serial killer couple.
Is Leon like a large man?
I didn't see a picture of Leon. What does that have to do with it?
Because then he would be more like the web. Like if he was like a supervillain, he would just be big and fat and people get stuck in all his folds.
Just sticky. I love it.
Yes.
Well, their game was to ingratiate themselves into the lives of relatives and acquaintances, with Leon being the more charming of the pair, the web. And then when the time was right and the victim was just where they wanted him, Marie would attack as the spider.
I like it. It's kind of cute.
So in 1940, Marie took a break from murdering her husband's family and set her sights on her own father, who died of a quote-unquote brain hemorrhage. Then it was Leon's father's turn. He died a few months after Marie's father, after eating quote-unquote poison mushrooms.
So many quote-unquotes.
Yeah,
that's why she's the quote-unquote killer.
I guess that's what you have to do for insurance.
And a year later, Marie murdered Leon's mother, who died of quote-unquote pneumonia. But the estate went to Leon's sister, and her murder was almost silly in its execution. They just poisoned her and said it was suicide.
Well, now they're getting confident.
And this was right around the time of Romeo and Juliet was very popular. You're thinking poison?
This was the 30s.
Yeah, it was been popular for hundreds of years. William Shakespeare's timeless.
It wasn't any more popular in the 30s than it was.
You never know when someone's going to discover it for the first time. And perhaps she did.
So are you saying in the 1930s that everyone still wearing the big Shakespearean collars?
I don't know what it was
playing
like.
Playing mandolins?
Talking to rats? I don't know. Yeah.
So by then, rumors of the Besnard curse were swirling around Leon and Marie, but police just dismissed it as gossip and took both of them at their word after each murder, never even thinking to investigate. But it wasn't just family members that the Besnards were killing during this time. They had a whole host of long games going in addition to all the familial side. In the late 30s, the Besnards took in a rich childless couple named the Rivets.
I think it's the Rivets.
Yeah, the Rivets are,
I think,
quite a difference in personalities between the Rivets and the Rivets, who are coming. We're saying we're coming for a week.
Hey, but guess what? A week in Rivet time is more like 9 years. Yeah, come on, Martha. Let's use the toilets at the same time. Yeah, the Rivets are here. Better lock up your fucking bathroom towels because we're using them to wipe ourselves with.
Oh, that's love.
So the Rivets moved in with the Besnards and soon wrote the Besnards into their will. Toussaint Rivet died in July 1939 of quote-unquote pneumonia, while Blanche would survive another year and a half in the Besnard house before dropping dead of quote-unquote the chest sickness.
Why back in the day were people just adding people to their will?
I don't know. Yeah, that seems strange. Just house guests, right?
I'm getting buried with my money.
Bury me with my money.
Money.
Next was...
I would love the open casket where Henry's buried with his money. Everyone just slowly pockets it as they walk by. No, I'm giving a 5 minute. I'm still speaking. I'm giving my condolences to Henry's corpse. Are you pocketing hundreds right now?
Just filled with mouse traps. Like my whole body's lined.
Next was Pauline Baldino and Virginie Layaron, Marie's elderly cousins. Incredibly, the cause of death put forth and believed for the first cousin was that she mistook a bowl of lye for her evening pudding.
Marcus, fucking, you don't understand. Have you ever had a fever for pudding? Have you ever just been like, God damn. Woke up in the morning. I'm shivering. I'm cold. What do I got to do to fix this sickness?
But honestly, on the Great British Bake Off, if someone did give them a bowl of lye instead of pudding, they'd still let them stay. You'd be like, no, mistakes happen. That's okay. You're back here on Tuesday. That's how there's
severe.
No competition.
The only way the lye would be able to stay is if the pastry was done at a perfect bake, which means it had a crispy bottom, it had a fine flake to it, a good butter actively worked through all of the batter. You know what I mean? So the idea is it's about what are the things that they executed properly,
yeah,
and what are the things that are just plain old mistakes.
So you're just going to overlook the poison.
If they live.
Well, even more incredibly, the other cousin, according to what Marie told the police, died from the exact same thing in the exact same situation just a few weeks later.
I mean, is it strange? I feel like because they're just killing their own family, other than the Rivets, innocent, it's not that bad. It's not as bad than killing strangers.
What are you talking about?
They're the ones who are also mourning. They're killing their own family.
So you think?
I think it's
just because you're blood related that the murder is fine.
Well,
you can just murder your family.
You're keeping it contained. You're not going out there devastating other families. You're simply chopping down your own tree. You're leaving others alone. I think there's
just because they are your cousins doesn't mean that those cousins don't also have their own family.
No,
and friends. They have their own family.
I'm just saying, thank you for not killing your neighbors. Thank you for staying within the family.
You are misguided.
I don't know. I'm just saying. Anyway, it is what it is.
Now, it does seem a little ridiculous that neither pudding incident was truly investigated.
Well, there's no way to ever. It's not like I've ever heard a saying that said something like the evidence would be somewhere inside of the pudding. I cannot imagine that anything. Never. I remember the other saying that said, never investigate a pudding.
What about that? The proof is in the pudding, yeah?
What?
Yeah, I have heard the proof is in the pudding.
The proof is where?
In the pudding.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But the evidence has been consumed.
But, you know, as far as these investigations go, you got to remember, this is France in 1941. They had a little problem called the Nazi occupation to worry about.
Because they didn't have the fucking spine to deal with it in the fucking first place.
Now, there's,
they had to wait for our boys to come over there. Oh, I know about World War II.
Yeah. Yo, it sounds like you have a real good grasp on World War II history.
I'm just saying, things could have been figured out. Things could have been fixed previous. And I will also say, Napoleon wasn't that short.
No.
No, that's actually a myth.
That was probably
a myth.
That is
my height. He's my height, which is a normal height. A
couple inches below average.
Oh, so he was your height.
I think he was actually like 5'8 or 5'9.
No, he's 5'7 is a normal height.
Oh, so he'd still be an inch taller than you.
No. I'm 5'7. I don't know if you've seen my driver's license or my IMDb.
Well, the point is that little old ladies eating the wrong pudding probably barely registered with the shit the police had to worry about that week.
Sure.
And as it was, all these unfortunate deaths were chalked up to the Besnard curse. So many years went by without a murder, and in the meantime, the Nazis got their asses kicked back to Germany.
Mm. How cool would that be to, like, be in a neighborhood where it's like, when we grew up in Queens, there was a woman that lived across the street from us that my mom hated that used to, like, she never filled in her lips. She just had purple outline. Oh, it was, like, old school back in the 90s, like, around her lips, just, like, all marked off and purple. My mom used to call her the witch across the street. She said it again and again. And, like, but can you imagine having one of those in your neighborhood, but she's actively murdering people. Yeah. And everybody knows she is. And she's got her swinging rope fucking handling husband.
That's
just
it.
Just walking around, sauntering around, super smug, knowing they're killing everybody.
I think, honestly, if she wasn't killing someone and you don't know anyone else that was killing anyone on that street in Queens, it was probably your mother doing all the murdering. There's definitely one person on every street in Queens killing someone with poison.
Yes.
Well, even though the Germans got their asses kicked out, some Germans stayed behind in France, and Marie took one of those ex-Nazis for a lover.
Oh.
But Leon was swinging as well, having taken the local postmistress as his paramour. And since they'd been killing so many people, they were very wealthy for their area. By this point, they had 6 houses, an inn, a cafe, and a few stud farms.
It's like,
I gotta tell you, it's kind of boring out here on the stud farm, but normally what they do is they give me a couple of traps with food in it so I can dig my way out so I don't get bored. I go in there and find my own food. And then also I got all these women to fuck.
It's Stud Farm, season 18, MTV 2024.
I'm the only man on this horse-covered stud farm.
So this is kind of, there's a little romance. It's like if Stephen King wrote Love Actually. It's kind of sweet.
Well, it wasn't long, though, before Marie decided she wanted to make her Nazi love affair official. So she plotted to murder her longtime husband and partner, Leon.
Oh, my goodness.
Fucking Nazis are always conniving. But I will say, they're ambitious.
Mm.
And he wanted to work his way up to husband.
I don't think
not that, just mister.
Do you think the Nazi was in on the killing of Leon? I bet you the Nazi didn't have a problem with Leon here.
What are you talking about?
I don't know.
What are we talking about? Of course the Nazi was into it. What are you talking
Leon's
about?
Leon's been complicit in multiple murders. Why can't he just live?
Are you giving the Nazi the benefit of the doubt here?
First of all, I'm giving a former Nazi who, okay, he stayed in France. He obviously didn't like Germany that much.
What?
That's all I'm saying. I don't think he wanted Leon dead.
Well, Marie did, at the very least. Yes. She tried tricking her husband into having a bit of the old family pudding, but he wasn't.
How many times do you think she could make that gag where it's just like, I'll just make the pudding again? It's like, at some point, everyone's going to know.
Don't eat the pudding. It's like as soon as they show up for her fucking, because you know at the cafe, it has a big, like, funny sign being like, got it, world's best pudding. And it's just her, like, smiling with a big fucking bowl of it.
Well, since she was pushing pudding on him pretty hard, Leon noticed that she was trying to kill him.
Oh, yeah.
And he, you know, told a friend of his about it. And things also weren't helped by the fact that Marie was known to often say that arsenic was just quicker than divorce.
Oh. Wait a second. I just realized this is pushing 2 and 2 together. She tried to give the pudding to Leon?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
I think we're having a hard time connecting the dots here. It's very interesting.
I mean, eventually she found a way to do it because in 1947, Leon became victim number 12.
Oh.
Marie would wait 2 more years for her last murder, that of her own mother. Mm. And Marie would have gotten away with it, as officials had officially chalked up the death of her mother to old age. But what got to Marie was the gossip. See, word around town was the whole Besnard curse thing was bullshit, and wasn't it convenient that Marie was the only one left by this point?
Hmm. Yes.
So Marie, just like the Polish prognosticator, started hurling death threats, specifically naming poison as her weapon of choice, left and right, which finally caught the authorities' attention.
Well, especially when you're just slinging poison, like in the one of those incest balls like they have yeah. in Catholic Church.
Oh my.
We're just being like, who does it touch? Who does it touch? They are the ones who will die so much. Back and forth across in the town. And be like, well, now you're fucking, well, we have to take you to jail, Marie. We've been trying not to take you to jail.
Yeah, I love a confident poisoner.
I like that too.
Yeah.
So they exhumed Leon and tested his body for arsenic, and sure enough, he was full of it. 13 more bodies were dug up, and all 13 tested positive, and Marie was finally arrested 30 years after her first kill. She confessed under questioning, but immediately recanted and went to trial with the best defense lawyers in France on her side.
Oh, she's the French old-timey OJ.
Pizza sales went through the roof. It's a Bronco chase, but with an actual horse. Well,
now, despite all the evidence facing Marie, her lawyers danced around all of it. First, they said the tissue samples taken from the jars were erroneously labeled or lost or replaced or improperly collected. Ben, you're actually closer to this whole OJ thing than you think you are.
That was me. That was me.
You said that, Henry?
Yeah.
Credit's been given to me. That's the British Bake Off. That is how it works. No justice whatsoever.
No! I made the bake!
Well, then the lawyer said the ground in the cemetery where some of the bodies were buried contained high levels of arsenic due to the chemicals used on flowers and such, and the poison must have seeped into the bodies that way.
Mm. Whoa.
And then finally, they tried the argument that a surprising number of lawyers representing serial killers try, usually when faced with overwhelming evidence, the come on argument.
What's that?
Come on!
Come on?
Come on!
Come on!
What's in the box?
This is the way that the lawyers put it.
In this country of good wines and fine living, one might possibly conceive of one murder, two murders, even three murders. But 11 murders? Preposterous! Come on!
Come on!
Come on!
I like it. I'm sure.
See, my
just
come on argument will be like, come on! It's me! It's me! It's Henry Zebrowski! Come on, guys! I wouldn't do such a thing! Come on! I'm only good for a leg!
It's me, Henry Zebrowski. You know, your favorite pitch person for Mako. Mako Auto Parts. Come, get your oil change here. You remember me. Come on! It's Henry Zebrowski. From the Mako commercials? Yeah, that Henry Zebrowski.
It's me!
No, well, this almost never, ever works. Mm. It worked in the case of Marie Besnard.
All right.
No shit.
Wow.
After three trials, Marie finally went free in 1961 and died a free woman almost 20 years later on Valentine's Day, 1980.
She lived until 1980?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, well, she was born in
She saw us go to the moon. She saw a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, she was born in 1896. You know, she was 84. That's not too bad.
That's a very old lady
for the
time.
For a career poisoner and serial killer, it's a very old age.
No, well, that's what we know. Hate keeps a person alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true. My fucking grandmother lived to the age of 93.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the worst.
Was that the same grandmother that would send you bags of safety pins?
No, that was my father's mother. Mm. That was my Nana. My grandmother would do stuff where she'd pull me aside and whisper in my ear, chocolate's gonna give you a heart attack.
Oh.
And then she'd pinch my sister underneath the table as she was eating food. She would like pinch her all the time, just be telling her to stop eating.
Huh. Well, in no way did that lead to any eating disorders or mental issues whatsoever.
No.
So that all worked out.
The one thing I will say about this story is that finally, some equality for women.
There it is.
And it just shows that if you have just enough money and just the right lawyers, you too can get off for a lifetime of murder.
There it is. So she killed 12.
12, yeah.
Oh, my
At
goodness.
Least 12.
Okay.
I mean, that's how it is with serial killers like this. Not like the ones that brag and try to inflate their numbers, but ones like this. Like, when you have evidence of 12, it's almost certainly more.
All right.
You know, it's like with Gacy, we have evidence of 33. It's probably more.
Yeah, most likely.
Now, in case you haven't noticed, the vast majority of black widows either use close family members or close friends as their victims. Mm. But more recently, a clever couple of old ladies in Los Angeles figured they had a better way to go about it.
Are we moving on from pudding talk?
We're moving on to no more pudding.
Oh, all right.
That's pudding talk.
I love pudding.
Well, according to Kissel, it doesn't matter if you kill close family members or close friends because it doesn't affect society in general.
No,
it
only just lessens your family.
Like there are shockwaves, you know, with any murder that goes through friends and coworkers.
Oh my God. I got that. I am just saying thank you for not killing my family. Thank you for killing your family.
Well, let's get in to Helen Golay and Olga Ruterschmidt, a.k.a. Hit and Run Hella and Overdrive Olga.
Yeah. This is such a good idea for a movie, the two old ladies killing people with their cars.
A fantastic idea for a movie. So Helen Golay was a retired insurance worker living in Hollywood when she met Hungarian immigrant and coffee shop owner Helga Ruterschmidt at a Santa Monica health spa sometime in the 90s.
Tell me, what is your name, Helen?
Yeah, my name is Helen. It's nice to meet you at this spa.
Yeah, isn't it nice? Isn't it wonderful? You know why we can be good friends?
Why, Olga?
Because we have the same sag. Oh. We sit here in the sauna together and it's the same U-shape of breast. Mm. And the me like.
What a duo. I'm happy they found each other.
So the two made fast friends and both worked as volunteers at the Hollywood Presbyterian Church helping out LA's huge homeless population.
Oh my goodness. The Skid Row of LA.
Oh yeah.
Maybe they met Ramirez.
They might
who
have.
Knows?
Who knows? No. This was in the 2000s. This was late 90s.
This is much more recent.
This is much more. Yeah. They met in the 90s.
Okay.
This is much more recent. This is actually the most recent one we're going to cover. And it's at the Hollywood Presbyterian Church helping out the homeless that these two women cooked up a scheme that ended up landing them in prison for the rest of their lives.
Ooh. Olga. Ever notice, you ever be here with all of these homeless people and you just think, what if we look, you know how you look into the abyss and the abyss like looks back and it calls to you and it says, jump in,
oh, yeah.
Be a part of mayhem. And Olga's like, yeah, I do. What if we just do that? You know what I'm saying, Olga? Let's just be bad. Let's be bad and just jump into the abyss.
Let's kill everything.
It's fun. It's like Mike Myers' character from Coffee Talk.
Now, their first victim was 73-year-old Paul Vados, who had been homeless and alone for years. They fed him, took him in, and gave him a place to live. The only thing they asked in return was a little personal information and his signature. Unbeknownst to
Harry, very suspicious.
Yeah, very strange.
Unbeknownst to Paul, Helen and Olga had taken Paul's signature and turned it into a rubber stamp that they used to take out large life insurance policies in Paul's name.
Look, see here, Olga, look. See how I'm Helen? I'm Helen. Hi, I'm Helen. See this stamp here? Now I'm Paul. And I can do whatever I want.
This is fun. I'm, like, wet for the first time. It's been a fucking Sahara down there. Now I'm sitting on a fucking swamp.
But how much life insurance? This guy's homeless. How much money can you get?
Well, what they did with these guys is they established a relationship with them. Is that it wasn't just they took him in, had him sign a bunch of documents, and then killed him. Mm-hmm. They nurtured a relationship with this guy in particular for 2 years because they had to establish a relationship with him, and they put certain things in his name because these women were, you know, they were actual like landowners. They had businesses. Mm. So they put things in Paul's name and essentially make him worth something.
Oh.
Yeah, and then you put insurance policies on top of that. Basically,
yeah,
you
see.
Buy like a little building and you put an insurance policy on top of it. And you do all of these things. You put health insurance policies onto him.
Mm-hmm.
He's walking around having the time of his life. He's 73 years old. He's been homeless for so long. He gets taken into this house for these two ladies.
I do want to know, is there a montage where they fix him up? They bring him to a Beverly Hills nice clothing store.
They took him to a groomer.
Yeah.
They got his nails clipped. They got his glands pressed.
Was the movie Trading Places where that happens, I think?
Well, in 1999, after 2 years of housing and feeding Paul, the scheme kicked into the next phase. Mm. Helen and Olga drugged Paul, laid him out in a dark alley, and made it look like Paul was changing the tire on a bike.
Hey, Olga, look, I'm Paul. I'm riding my bike. Oh, I'm Paul. I'm hungry. I used to be hungry. Not anymore. Not thanks to Helen. What Helen did for me. If you could just thank me for a second for what Helen did for me. Oh, I got a flat. Oh, it's easy to do. You set up the timeline, Olga.
Actually, you know, he sounds a lot more like... I got a car full of farts.
Oh, my God. Ted Pillman.
I'm saving for you.
Ted Pillman. Old school.
Well, after laying down Paul and then setting up the bike next to him, they got into Olga's silver Mercury Sable and ran him down, killing him and collecting over $600,000 in insurance money on the old man's murder.
Huh. Wow. I know it's really sad that this man is dead, and R.I.P. Mm-hmm. I'm not weird, but this is you can see him doing it.
Yeah.
Putting the bandanas on and everything like that.
You look good, Olga. Yes, exactly. You look like a criminal. I love it. What we're going to do is, same time though, is that my arms are like balsa wood. How are your arms? Are they also like balsa wood, I imagine, or both deep in her 60s? I don't really know how we're going to move this man into the alleyway, because that's the thing. How did they get him in there?
That's what I'm trying to think about here. I have no idea.
That was the argument the defense lawyer made when they got caught, but I would imagine they just kind of shuffled him in and they gave him a soda with a bunch of like drugs in it in the alleyway.
Did
and
they
then
set
just
up like
drink the soda, Paul? Drink the soda. Just drink it. Hey, we don't have all day to watch you be drinking these sodas. All right, now we're going to play a game called the lie down game, Paul. We're going to lie down. Trust me, I saved your life. I saved your life, Paul.
It seems like you guys are really getting more dangerous and getting meaner to me as the time goes on.
It seems like Paul's noticing things a bit too much and that Paul needs to take a bit of an alley nap.
Did you say something about a soda?
Here you go.
Well, funny thing was, these women didn't really need the money. Helen was already a millionaire from real estate holdings in Santa Monica, and Olga was pretty well-to-do in her own right.
They were just bored?
It was a game. This whole thing was a game, and they loved playing it.
Honestly, get rid of Jigsaw. If it was Helen that rolled in, would be so
Helen
much
and
scarier.
Olga.
It's me, Helen.
Ooh, and it's me, Olga. Have some cold soup. It's from Hungary. All soup from Hungary is cold because we want to make sure even when you're comforted that you are miserable.
It's time to play a game.
Well, 3 years after Paul, the ladies would start it all over again.
Oh, my goodness.
In 2002, Olga and Helen told 55-year-old Kenneth McDavid that they'd pay his rent if only he'd sign a sheet of paper for him. Once again, they got his signature, and once again, they made a rubber stamp. This time, they took out 13 policies totaling almost $4 million.
Oh, my.
Fuck. Yeah. Wow. Man, this is like Funny Games meets going out in style.
Now, again, Kenneth was killed in an alley hit and run. They even tried it a third time with a guy named Jimmy Covington. They took old Jimmy out to Burger King for the pitch, but Jimmy was smart, refused, and eventually testified at their trial.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but maybe you will say yes to some French toast sticks.
Don't even.
You know what I do like is that you know that she was revving up the car, and at some point, you know, like they're about to murder him, and AC/DC's playing, and she's just like, "Oh, this is too loud. This is too loud. I gotta murder him while I'm relaxed."
Flips on the Michael Bublé.
There's nothing I like than new Rat Pack songs.
Bublé.
Well, the women might have gotten away with all this had coincidence not come into play, as it often does with cases like this. The detective investigating the second murder happened to mention it to another cop who had investigated the first. And they came up with a few similarities. First, hit-and-run injuries are usually from the waist down, as that's where the point of impact usually is.
Yes.
And both of these guys had obviously been run over while they were laying down on the ground.
Yeah, they probably had those Looney Tunes tire marks over them.
If you watch back alley brawl between Roddy Piper and Goldust. Do you remember that?
No.
Roddy Piper is, Goldust hits him with a car, and you'll notice that where he hits him, in the hip. You have to watch that match. It's from like 1997.
Was Goldust, like, stationed in the alley, like, turning tricks? Because yeah. I know at the time, Goldust was a problematic character.
Well, I wasn't sure if he was a huffer or if he was just maybe into men. But it could go either way. Goldust never officially came out as gay. Although now there isn't in the NXT, the Velveteen Dream. There is an openly gay character.
Huh. Well, second, in this case, there were the bicycles. While the ladies had set up both to look like the guys were changing bike tires, they forgot to actually de-inflate the tires. So there was no reason for the men to be changing the tires.
Olga, you know for a fact, I'm not a detail woman. I'm a big ideas woman. What am I supposed to do? The soup got hot. I can't be sitting here and letting it, the soup got hot while sitting in the car. I had to take it to the refrigerator.
Well, third, the insurance companies were starting to look into things as well because Olga and Helen were constantly calling up the companies, bickering over who was going to get paid most and who was going to get paid first.
Oh, my goodness.
And it also didn't help that both men had about a dozen policies each taken out on them. Mm. So when police checked surveillance video from the neighborhood where McDavid was killed, the second victim, they saw a silver Mercury Sable right near the alleyway where his body was found. The same kind one of the beneficiaries in the insurance policy drove.
And I gotta say, the Mercury Sable, just made for older women. My grandmother yes. had one. It is just perfect.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Now, they also found that an auto club had been called to the area right around the time of McDavid's death to pick up a damaged silver Mercury Sable.
They were just psychopaths.
Yes.
That did no planning.
It's quite fascinating, this duo.
So naturally, they caught up to the two old ladies and brought them in for questioning. And still, they might have gotten away with it had they not bickered in the police station while they were waiting in a room that was obviously under constant video and audio surveillance.
Honestly, this is like it's straight out of Absolutely Fabulous.
Yeah.
This
is Ab Fab. Is.
Like, it is. Great movie, great series, by the way. If you don't know Ab Fab, check it out.
Well, Rudderschmidt said to Golay, among many other things, quote,
"Why did you make the extra insurances? Too many. You can't do that. You were greedy. That is the problem."
Oh, that's the problem.
That's
that they were greedy.
You're right, Olga. Yeah, you're right. I was greedy. Oh, what a horrible sin. Forgive me. Forgive me, God. Don't forgive me for the murderers, because I'll watch every man I've ever met be ground under the tires of my wonderful, proud Mercury Sable.
Love a good Mercury Sable.
Well, when they went to trial, Helen tried to pull a Betty Lou Beats, saying her daughter was framing her for the whole thing. But the two women were easily put away in 2008 and will undoubtedly soon die in prison.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Now, Helen and Olga are not the only women to think they were real goddamn clever in their murderous profit schemes. For our last Black Widow, let's take a look at Stella Nickel, a.k.a. Cyanide Stella.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you giving these nicknames?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. All the ones I gave really them all. Great. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. So Black Widows, it's not necessarily the husband that they kill.
The nature of the crime has to be profitable,
yeah.
It seems. Mm. To be a Black Widow, it's like you're getting something out of the deal.
Yeah.
Like you are, this is, it's serial killing meets grand theft.
Well, not a serial killer, Stella Nickel of Seattle still deserves a place in the annals of Black Widow history for her complete disregard and disdain for human life.
Hmm.
Stella was a regular old run-of-the-mill, hard-drinking resident of the trailer park who married her husband Bruce in 1976 when his lifestyle was the same.
Oh, yeah.
But when
having a good time.
A match made in the courthouse.
But when Bruce got sober in the mid-80s,
oof,
Stella was suddenly without a drinking buddy.
Oh, what, you think you're fucking better than her?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry, if you're two drunks and you're getting married, till death do you part, or till sobriety brings one of you into a different world?
Well, the clarity is what ruins everything.
Exactly. You're a different person. You stop boozing, but you marry when you're boozing. That nullified, nulled. Annulled. It's over.
Yeah, well, Stella had the same sort of idea. But, I mean, she tried, I mean, to pass the time. She had an obsessively maintained, reportedly very impressive home aquarium. But, you know, in the end, nothing compared to going out to a bar at night and raising hell.
Yes,
don't get me wrong. There's nothing I don't like better than seeing all the yellow fish all jump in and out of that hollow man putting in the bottom of it. But the one thing I like better than fish is a jukebox.
I agree with her.
So Stella decided she wanted out.
Of course.
But she also figured she'd make a little money in the meantime. First, she took out a life insurance policy on Bruce, as they all do, in addition to the one he already had. But the thing was, the existing policy paid out an extra $100,000 if the death was ruled accidental.
Now tell me, according to this contract, does it mean, when it says accidental, does it mean I can murder him with an axe? Insurance policy, man, tell me your fucking explanations, okay? I ain't got fucking all day.
I don't
with
know.
The accidental.
It means he has to, like, slip on a banana peel or something like that has to happen.
Then why didn't you put that in the goddamn contract?
Well, we'll write it in now.
So, how do you make a murder accidental?
Exactly.
Well, how Stella did it, she was inspired by the still to this day unsolved Chicago Tylenol murders.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yes,
yeah.
In which 7 people ingested randomly placed cyanide-laced pills. Mm. Stella did the same with 4 extra-strength Excedrins and gave 2 of those Excedrins to Bruce.
I don't really even need these anymore, Stella. I'm not hammered. I'm not hungover. I don't really, I didn't do anything. I didn't hurt my back or anything. Like,
you're taking it's a preventative. It's a preventative. You're taking just because life hurts. Life sucks. You got to take some sometimes.
That's actually a good point.
Well, Bruce was in the hospital hours later and died soon after arrival. Only problem was the doctors ruled his death as natural causes resulting from Bruce's emphysema. Precisely the opposite of what Stella wanted.
So tell me, insurance policy man, if I go in there, now he's dead. If I go in, he's sitting in the slab.
Yes.
Can I hit him with the axe? Now I get the extra
money? No, again, ma'am, that is not what it means. Accidental. This is natural causes, yeah.
I'm going to say I killed him. I'm going to say that I did that. I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I did that. You give me the money, we call even Steven.
Well, since Stella couldn't very well say, look again, she had to take things a step further.
Uh-huh.
She planted cyanide-laced Excedrin pills in 3 more bottles and scattered them throughout stores in Seattle.
These fuckers don't want to believe me. I'm going to become the fucking Joker. I can do this in a second. It's easy to do. Blah, blah, blah. Everybody's fucking poison now. Everybody's saying, oh, pay attention to your aquarium. But I tell you what, I'd rather be murdering.
It is such drunk logic.
Oh, yeah.
It's so much work.
It's drunk logic, and she also did it like a drunk. Like,
I'm
sure. Apparently the bottles were not resealed very well. Like the like she used too much glue when she glued the boxes back together.
Bing bam boom, good as you manufacturer. The manufacturer doesn't make it as good as I do. As a matter of fact, I should send some of these faulty boxes to the manufacturer and have them look at it and say new policies for all the boxes.
Foolproof plan.
Thing was that, you know, still, you know, some people, they got busy lives, they don't pay attention. Mm-hmm. And about a week later, bank manager Susan Snow dropped dead.
Oh my God.
Bad luck. And when the coroner was performing the autopsy, he noticed the scent of bitter almonds, a hallmark of cyanide. And other pills in the bottle were tested and came up positive. And soon after, police went public with the news. There was Stella Nickel with testimony that her husband had also taken Excedrin the day he died.
My husband was sober as a cat. He never should have taken that Excedrin. I said to him, you got no back problems. You got to. And he said to me, oh, it's a preventative. So it's his fault. It's his fault and I deserve payment.
Well, this also gave Stella the opportunity to double dip. Now, instead of just an insurance payout, she also had a wrongful death suit. And it would have all gone perfectly had it not been for one slip-up on Stella's part.
Uh-oh.
See, in order to get the cyanide into the tablets, Stella had to crush up the cyanide into a fine powder. But she did that in the same bowl that she had used to crush up a chemical she used in her aquarium called Algae Destroyer.
Ah.
And she didn't wash the bowl in between crushings.
Oh, no.
And then she failed a lie detector test.
That'll happen.
What took her down for good was her kid, like happens in a lot of these cases.
Always with these fucking kids. What? Loose lips. Yeah. Loose lips, man.
Well, the things about Stella's loose tongue is that she just loved talking to her daughter from her first marriage about, you know, what if Bruce was dead?
What else do they have going on?
What if
think
we
about?
Had a whole lot of life insurance money to spend? What?
I tell you what, you'd think I'm fun now, but if your mommy had a lot of more money, your mommy would be a lot more fun to begin with. And I also think we should get into the box manufacturer business and start selling boxes to different people. Zip, zap, zap. You got to spend money, make money.
Mama, I'm a little bit worried that you're just going to drink yourself to death if you have any more money, because the small amount of money you do have now, it's gone. It goes to Mad Dog 2020 and Jameson.
Only if I'm lucky.
Well, Stella talked about it so much to her daughter that when Stella called up her daughter to tell her that Bruce was dead, the first thing she said after the break in the news was,
I know what you're thinking, and the answer is no.
And that's true.
Hey, all right. Well, she didn't confess. Look at that.
She even told her daughter that she'd already tried to kill him once using foxglove, but all it did was make him lazy.
So her... So
her daughter from the first marriage. No, Bruce was the daughter's stepdad.
Anyway, her alibi was like, I tried to kill him before and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Why would I do it again?
Okay. Yeah, why would I do it again? Anyway. But I guess we must be giving foxglove to all our members of Congress. Because they seem to be acting real lazy as of late as well.
So when the daughter told all this to cops, they started looking into Stella's library records. And they found that Stella had checked out two books. Deadly Harvest and Human Poisonings from Native and Cultivated Plants.
Oh, the only two books that might make her, obviously the suspect.
Super guilty. Okay. Yes. And she didn't return either one of those books, I'll have you know.
No, you see, that's smart. Because that gets rid of the evidence.
Because you don't return them.
You got to pepper it with something else, like a bio of Roy Orbison or something. Like, she like very specifically was in the Black Widow section of the library.
Yeah.
It's like the art of staying with your husband.
Yeah, and she didn't get rid of the books either. She just kept them in her trailer. And when cops dusted the books for fingerprints, the only pages with Stella's fingerprints were the ones concerning cyanide. And so Stella was charged with 5 counts of product tampering, resulting in 2 deaths, and was sentenced to 90 years in prison. And by the way, she's still alive and well. And up for parole next year.
Okay.
And I'll tell you what, now that I've been sober for a couple of years, I can say that my husband was wrong, and being sober sucks.
She's drinking some Pruno. She's got some prison wine brewing every single day. You know
If she's watching Fresh Out. Because Fresh Out talks about him making Pruno, and it's just the problem with Pruno is that half the time it'll make you fucking blind.
Oh, yeah. It's an intense stuff. Lock Up Raw, they just had a big bust on the one I was watching.
Oh, yeah?
Garbage bags full of this stuff. Really disgusting. Like when Oprah brought out all of her fat on the radio flyer? That's what it looks like. But I drink it.
Well, that's it for Black Widow's Part 2.
Right.
You know, I know some people were asking for us to cover Belle Gunness on this episode, but Belle Gunness, like we said in the first episode, she's getting one all her own.
Okay.
But yeah, we're just waiting until Hell's Princess comes out by Harold Checter on April 1st. Go buy that. Go buy every book that Harold Checter has ever written. He's great.
If I could write the book, I would rename it Harold's Princess, because that's what she would have been, and I would have treated her as queen, and never would she have murdered anyone, because my love, my dick, would have solved it.
But then you wouldn't have anything to write about, Harold.
But I don't need to write if I finally just have somebody I could lay down with.
Oh, man, it gets sadder and sadder.
I actually think he's married. I think he's married with a couple.
He's very happily married with a couple of kids. Harold Schechter lives a wonderful life. He's a professor out in Queens.
Oh, right. Well, a couple of, I guess there are vignettes, the stories that we just did. Little vignettes.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done like a collection of certain types of murderers. But yeah, we figured we'd do something different this time.
Yeah, Helen and Olga.
I would also just say, if you weren't afraid of women before, now it's time just to remember that every once in a while they could just pop off and kill a whole bunch of you.
Yep.
You know?
Well, really, Black Widow murders are kind of a thing of the past. You know, at least as far as, like, the ones they get, like, the 30, 40 ones.
I guarantee that they are not. We have been, we talked about this last episode. ID Channel has been teaching women how to murder for fucking 10 years.
Well, you know,
they've just gotten better. They've just gotten better.
You look at the decline of the family dinner. And as big fast food restaurants and these, you know, huge corporations come in and feed us, there's no time to poison. You can't put another seasoning on your KFC, arsenic or anything like that. It's not easy anymore.
Yeah. Well, to be serious for just a second, net neutrality. I know everybody's been hearing about it lately. Pretty much what net neutrality is going to make it, what's going to happen if net neutrality ends, it's going to be possible for cable companies to charge you for podcasts. They can charge you for access to podcasts, and they can charge us for giving you podcasts. So if you want to keep the internet the way it is, if you want to keep podcasts free, call your congressman. You can go to battleforTheInternet.com to find out ways to do your part. Please, guys, this is actually very, very important in a lot of different ways. This is something that we actually need to take a hand in.
The FCC is in their Ted Bundy sorority berserk phase right now. I have no idea what the hell is going on.
Now they're giving all the power to corporations. Not only that, they're also putting in rules to make it easier for corporations to completely consolidate the media in towns. In like, giving them the power to consolidate local media. This is very serious stuff that is threatening our freedoms in hundreds of different ways.
I posted about this yesterday on Twitter, and I had several people respond to me saying, no, I don't want to save net neutrality because it in the end, it's going to help the consumer to have a free market, and that it's just not the truth. It's not the truth. It's just they're lying to you. It's never worked like that, ever. Corporations do not care about you.
No.
They don't give a shit. They're going to ruin your whole life. And we're talking about, I think a lot of people have made the joke already, they're going to fuck with your porn.
Yeah.
They're going to fuck with that first. They're going to fuck with the things that you really like first. Netflix is going to come first. All these things are going to, you have to understand, it's dire.
I disagree with that completely. They're going to come for the things you truly love last, because they're going to get you used to it first. It's going to be a small incremental thing, and the last thing they're going to do is come after your porn, and by that time you're so used to it, you're going to say yes and you're going to thank them for it.
Well, we do have to think about porn addiction and what it's done to our society. All right, everyone. I want to thank everyone who came out to Omaha. That was our final live show.
Yeah.
Holy hell, that was incredible. Wonderful stuff.
It was incredible. I'm still getting healed.
Yep.
From that weekend. Yeah. Omaha was intense.
We did not have any steaks, though. I'm so... I didn't anyway.
No, I didn't either.
We had burgers, which were pretty good. No, we didn't have any chance because we wanted to go, and it ended up being date night in Omaha, and we went around looking for steaks, and all the waits were too
long. Oh, that's right. It was Omaha date night.
Yeah, Omaha date night.
But then you didn't have chicken fried steaks with us in the morning at the diner. Which was pretty great, pretty thick.
Oh, yeah, I had biscuits and gravy. It was some of the best biscuits and gravy I ever had.
You were invited.
I don't know if I was invited, but that's okay.
You were invited. You were on a text chain between the four of us to say, hey, we're going to eat right now.
Thanks for everyone. Thanks for the Patreon people. Thank you all so much for everything that you've done for us. We got a new shirt out as well.
Yeah.
These represent shirts just in time for the holiday season. One says Hail Satan. One just says Last Podcast on the Left. So if you don't want to, if you want to be able to talk to your uncle, you know, maybe just get the Hail Satan one. Or if your uncle's real cool, get the Hail Satan one.
Yeah, it's got a pretty cool devil on it. So I hope you enjoy it. Please, and then also follow us on Twitter at Henry Loves You, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, at on Instagram at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel, #1. And on all the bullshits, follow Last Podcast on the Left at LP on the Left.
That's it. And for all your needs here, we got politics, Abe Lincoln's top hat. Somehow a spookier show than this one at times. we'll get into all the net neutrality stuff and the free market and all that kind of stuff on the next episode.
I don't mean to talk about politics on the show, but this is
well, serious. This is a policy thing.
Yeah, this is going to directly affect us. It's going to affect us.
It directly affects us, and it directly affects you.
Well,
so this is very important to us.
Wizard and the Bruiser, page 7, movie sign with the Mads. And what's the name?
Escuela Sangre.
Escuela Sangre.
Great.
Celeste. I don't know her. I have no idea who she is.
It's so easy. Spanish is easy.
Willa Sangre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, you don't have to say it. You don't have to give it like a Spanish flair. Just Escuela Sangre.
Escuela Sangre.
Like, you don't say burrito. You just say burrito. You can do the same thing with Escuela Sangre.
Gordita. You don't say burrito. I always get Ayos Gordita.
Gordita.
That's me
gordita.
Too.
Jarritos. Give me Hail a burrito Satan. And a jarritos.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
El Gin.
Hail me.
Megustelations.
Oh, Megustelations.
Yeah, toss it in there.